It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to an hour of science fiction. Later on, we hear the story Nightmare on X-1, but first, it's the author's Playhouse, featuring Nelson Bond's story, Johnny Cartwright's Camera. This episode first heard on ABC on July 22, 1944.
The Armed Forces Radio Theater presents Johnny Cartwright's Camera, starring Olin Soleil.
Johnny Cartwright is a newspaper photographer and a good one. He likes his job and he works hard at it. And right now, he's developing some pictures in the press darkroom with the somewhat dubious assistance of a lad by the name of Dopey.
Hey, Dopey.
Yeah, Mr. Cartwright? You call me Mr. Cartwright? What is it, huh?
Hand me that frame of plates over there on the shelf. And be careful. You had a tough time getting those shots.
Yes, sir, Mr. Cartwright. Right away, Mr. Cartwright. Here they are. There you are.
Look out there.
Oh, Mr. Cartwright.
Great day in the morning. Look at that. You've smashed every confounded plate in the rack. You clumsy, good-for-nothing idiot.
Oh, golly, Mr. Cartwright. I am awful sorry. Gee, I didn't mean to do nothing like that. Mr. Cartwright, honest. I sort of let loose my whole life and then I...
Oh, shut up.
Yes, sir.
Oh, whole day's work smashed to smithereens of all the witless wonders. Oh, well. Clean up the mess, Dopey. I'm going out and grab a handful of aspirin.
Hi there, Johnny.
Hey, what's up? Trouble?
You guessed it.
Oh, not Dopey again.
Yeah, he clings to me like a shroud.
He's not very smart, is he?
Dopey?
Smart?
His brains were the original pattern for the... Well, it's not his IQ I'm kicking about, though. It's his confounded clumsiness.
Why on earth did you ever hire him?
I didn't. Chief did. He just happens to be the chief's brother-in-law, that's all. Uh-oh. Speak of the devil, don't look now, but here comes the chief.
Oh, yeah.
Cartwright! Blaine!
Yeah, chief? Yes, chief?
Get up off your brain. The scene of victory, Doc, today from Rio. Pier 63. Senorita Deleuze is aboard.
Deleuze?
Yes, get going.
Gangway.
Oh, the glorious Gloria.
Woo-hoo.
Hey, Dopey.
Yeah, Mr. Cartwright?
Bring my speed graphic and the film back adapter.
Yes, sir.
And three packs of Superplan and make it snappy.
Woo-hoo, Deleuze,
the South American sway.
Where are you going, Mr. Cartwright? Are you going somewhere, Mr. Cartwright? Are you, Mr. Cartwright?
We are departing, my little man, to bask in the effulgence of the deliriously delicious Senorita Deleuze, sometimes known as the Brazilian rumba number.
The gal who put the hacha in La Cucaracha.
Oh, golly, Senorita Deleuze. Oh, can I go too, Mr. Cartwright? Please, can I, Mr. Cartwright? How can I go too, Mr. Cartwright?
Absolutely not. I don't want you messing up an otherwise pleasant afternoon.
I beg your pardon, Cartwright, but do you mean to intimate that my brother-in-law...
Oh,
might...
the things I do for a living. All right, then. Come on, Dopey. But make it snappy. We got to catch that ship before she lands.
Senorita Deleuze, how do you like the United States?
Well,
Miss Deleuze, do you find American men more or less attractive than men of your country?
Oh, well, the men...
Senorita, is it true you've signed the Hollywood contract?
Oh, boys, please. Must not ask me questions so quick.
Oh, well, we didn't mean...
Sorry, sir.
Big. What's that, Johnny? Pictures, remember?
Oh, yeah.
I came here to get some pictures.
Oh, yes, of course. Senorita Deleuze,
yes. My
cameraman is here. Would you mind if he took a few pictures for our newspaper?
Pictures? Oh, no, of course not.
Oh, swell.
Fine. Then, if you'll be kind enough to sit over here on this rail, Senorita.
Oh, here?
There, that's it. Now, if you'll just cross your,
Oh, you Americans, so frank. But if you insist, like this, you mean?
Yeah, like that. I mean, like that. Okay, Dopey, let's have the camera.
Yes, sir, Mr. Cartwright. Coming right up. Here you are, Mr. Cartwright.
Look out, grab that camera.
What have you done now?
Oh, golly, it slipped right out of my hands, Mr. Cartwright. Gee, I'm so sorry, Mr. Cartwright.
You blundering nitwit.
Oh, I'm terrible sorry, Mr. Cartwright. Gee, I didn't mean to drop it, honest. I just sort of tripped,
Oh,
I did.
Give me that box.
Yes, sir.
If it's broken, I'll carve your cranium into a totem pole.
Yes, sir.
Well, let me see it.
Oh, how is it, Johnny?
Well, lens seems to be okay. Yes. Shutter's not broken. And it's a good thing for you, too, right? Well, never mind. If you're ready now, Senorita Deleuze.
Most certainly, senor. Now, how's this?
Well, just a trifle higher, if you don't mind.
Higher on the rail?
No. I didn't mean the rail. I meant your,
Oh, I see. You mean like this?
Maybe. Yeah. It ain't bad.
Oh, hiya, Johnny. Hey, are those prints ready yet?
Well, let's go see. Dopey's working on them.
Okay.
That's funny. Dopey? Hey, Dopey.
He's not in the dark room.
Not unless he's taking a bath in the hypo pan. Gone again. I tell you, Ted, that guy's the laziest, good for nothing.
Hello, Mr. Cartwright.
Oh, there you are, in the woodwork.
Yes, sir.
Where are those shots we took at the lead?
Pictures, Mr. Cartwright?
Yeah, pictures.
Oh, I finished developing them, I did, and I took them over to the boss. He wanted to see them right away. He was figuring on using them in the tree star. Until he seen them, that is.
Until... What do you mean? Didn't they turn out?
Well,
You mean the camera did get broken after all?
Oh, it wasn't exactly that, Mr. Cartwright. Well, maybe you better go see the boss yourself. He wants to see you and Mr. Lane, he does.
Yeah, all right, we will. Come on, Ted. But if there's anything the matter with my camera, I'll take it out of your hide, Dopey.
Yes? Who is it?
Johnny Cartwright, Chief, and Ted Lane.
Oh, you. Come in.
Dopey, Carruthers said you wanted to see us, boss.
Yes, that's right. Well, boys, it didn't take you very long to cover your assignment, did it?
Well, you know us, Chief. Do or die for the dear old blade.
I like that. Especially the die part. And you, Ted, I suppose you got a fine story?
Oh, it's on the spike. Haven't you seen it?
I have. And a more brilliant accumulation of quite uninspired banalities I've never read in 20 years of editing.
Huh?
When interviewed today, Senorita DeLee said she was tremendously impressed with the height of our American skyscrapers and the width of our American shoulders.
Well, after all, Chief, what do you expect of a striptease, a professional dancer? You know, she's not here to exhibit her brains to the American public.
That will do. And you, Johnny, while Lane was preparing this staggering opus, I suppose you were making some startling shots of Senorita DeLee's celebrated profile.
Is that what you call him? Learn something every day, huh? Maybe I ought to title those pics Profiles in Nylon.
Yes, those pics. Maybe you two ought to start looking for new jobs.
What?
But we didn't do anything.
Come clean. What was the score?
The score?
I suppose you didn't go to the ball game. Then where were you? Bending elbows down at Joe's place?
Hey, now, wait a minute, Chief. You sent us to interview DeLease, and that's where we went. You've seen the proofs, haven't you?
Have I?
The pics. You've seen the pics, haven't you?
I've seen these, if that's what you mean.
But what the...
There are your pictures. Look at them. A fine pair of newspaper men you are.
Hey, but wait a minute. These aren't pictures of Gloria DeLease at all.
You're telling me?
Well, they're pictures of a steamship.
On fire.
Yeah, just about the same spot where we were today. Look, Ted.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that, Doc. And golly, look, small boats being lowered.
Water dotted with the heads of swimmers.
People jumping from the burning ship and the fireboats racing up.
Cheaper, look at this one. The smoke's cleared away, now you can see the ship's name.
Yeah, the S.S. Cymbeline.
Right.
But, Chief, this is terrible.
Awful. We didn't see anything like this. When did it happen?
That's just it, you fakers. It didn't happen. The steamship Cymbeline is on our way here from Bermuda at this moment. She won't dock until tomorrow. Get out of here.
But, Chief...
You're fired, both of you.
Chief, I tell you, there must be some mistake. I didn't take these pictures. Ask Dopey. He'll tell you.
Don't try to pass the buck, Cartwright. Dopey, I mean my brother-in-law, brought me these pictures right out of your camera. Now, get out.
All right.
I knew I shouldn't have chipped in on that bronze paperweight last Christmas.
Mr. Cartwright.
Yeah, what is it, Dopey?
I'm sorry if I got you in trouble, Mr. Cartwright. Honest, I am. I didn't mean no harm, Mr. Cartwright. But you said I was to take them pictures to the editor as soon as they was developed, so I didn't.
Oh, shut up. You know perfectly well those aren't the pictures I snapped on the Victory.
Honest to goodness, Mr. Cartwright, them was the pictures that was in the camera. I seen them fire scenes, and I thought it was kind of funny, but you told me to give the prints to the chief.
Okay. You're as sappy as a maple tree in April.
Yes, sir.
Else you're covering up some dumb trick of your own.
Yes.
But see if I care. I can find a better job than this in 5 minutes.
And ditto. I never did like working for this rag anyhow. Who'll we give a break first, Johnny?
The globe?
Just a minute. Dopey, hand me that camera.
Yes, sir.
That's mine, you know, not the blade. Oh, yeah, and hand me a couple of dozen film packs while you're at it.
Oh, but Mr. Cartwright, that wouldn't be honest.
Don't give me arguments, give me film packs. I'm declaring myself a dividend, a little farewell present from the paper.
Yes, sir, Mr. Cartwright. About that speed graphic of yours, Mr. Cartwright.
Yeah?
I think it got sort of damaged-like when it fell. Sort of, kind of. But if you'll let me, I think I can fix it for you. I'm a good mechanic, Mr. Cartwright. Honest, I am.
Skip it. Gimme. All right, Ted?
Yeah, whenever you are.
Okay, let's get going. So long, Dopey.
So long, Mr. Cartwright.
And if I never see you again, it'll be too soon.
Seems funny to be walking out of the old dump forever.
What's the matter? You going soft on me?
Oh, no, but I...
Hey, look. The door of the chief's office is open.
Yeah.
I'm going to snap a farewell picture of the old slob.
What for? Your memory book?
No, to enter in the annual wildlife picture contest. Human anteater lurking in his lair. There, got it. All right, now let's get out of here, Ted.
Yeah.
Globe, dust off the welcome mat.
Well, now, boys, I'd like to take you on the globe, but we're overstaffed as it is. However, if you'll accept 40 a week as a starting salary, I...
40
think
a week? Are you kidding?
Come on, Ted, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Sorry, fellas, the trip doesn't need any men just now.
Nothing open. Why don't you try the blade? I understand they just lost the Paranoa Count Hanks.
No jobs open, sorry.
Not today, sorry.
Sorry?
Sorry. 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 Sorry.
Well?
Well, yourself.
We've covered the town like a blanket, and it's no soap. Now what?
I don't know. What's the matter with the rags in this burg, anyhow? Don't they recognize genius when they see it?
Johnny.
Huh?
Do you think we maybe made a mistake? You know, maybe we ought to go back and apologize.
Oh, no, not in a million years. I'd rather die of starvation first.
Is that a vow or a prediction? Well, we can't sit on this park bench all night. I'm going home and sleep. How about you?
Yeah. Guess I'd better grab a hunk of shut-eye, too. Gee, I wish I had my own dark room.
Dark room? What for?
Well, those pics I snapped while we were wandering around this afternoon.
Oh.
How am I going to get them developed now that I can't use the blades equipment?
Yeah, that's right.
That snap of the breeze-blown blonde in front of the First National Bank ought to be a breath snatcher in any man's library.
Yeah.
Oh, well. See you about 2 tomorrow.
Yeah, 2. Right. We'll keep on hunting for jobs, even if we have to go all the way across the water to Brooklyn.
Morning, Mabel.
Morning, you're answering, Mr. Cartwright. It's 2:15 in the afternoon. Why aren't you at work?
Why don't you mind your own business? Give me some cereal and coffee and...
Sweet to the sweet. That's what I always say.
Shoot one from gun. Couple doses.
Finder,
faintly played,
read all about the...
Oh, a paper,
mister?
Yeah, give me a blade.
Here you are, sir. Thank you.
Finder, read all about it here. Finder!
Holy cow.
What's the matter?
Matter? Look at this headline.
Hmm?
12 dead, 130 injured in river tragedy. Boiler explosion blamed for fire aboard SS Cymbeline. For further exclusive blade photographs, turn to page 9.
Oh, ain't that terrible? It's like I always said, though. Them excursions...
Terrible? Uh-huh. Listen, you don't realize what this means. Let me out of here.
But your breakfast!
Eat it yourself. You burned it.
Hey, Johnny, look at the paper. Did you see what...
Did I see? You bet I did. Come on, let's go find out what this is all about.
Falls on Act One of Johnny Cartwright's Camera. Act Two follows in just a moment.
Johnny,
As our second act opens, the news of the fire aboard the SS Cymbeline has sent Johnny and Ted scurrying back to the offices of the Daily Blade.
Hey, Bud, is the chief in?
No, but he said when you two came in, you were to wait for him. He wants to see you.
Yeah, I figured he would. Come on, Ted. We'll wait in the dark room.
Okay.
Hello, Mr. Cartwright. Hello, Mr. Lane.
Hello, Dopey.
Gee, I'm glad you come back, I am. I missed you. Do you want I should work on that camera now?
Don't touch it, boo.
Huh?
That's French for keep your paws off, Dopey.
Oh, oui, monsieur.
But there's a half pack in the adapter. Develop it if you want to.
Half a pack, Mr. Cartwright? Sure, Mr. Cartwright. I'll develop it right away. What's in it, Mr. Cartwright?
Oh, various and sundry junk. Ooh. That snap of the chief, Ted. And those shots I snagged around town yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
Sure, when do you see that babe I told you about? Oh, hey, there's the boss now. Oh, Chief. Chief.
Oh, there, Cartwright. Lane, glad to see you. Come into my office.
Chief, that story.
Yeah, those pics, Chief.
Boys, you're both hired back again, and I'm putting through ratings. Those pictures are the most astounding example of newspaper ingenuity I've seen in all my years of experience.
Yeah?
But, Johnny, how did you know that fire was going to happen? Did you have an inside tip?
Now, Chief, listen. Those pics were not fake.
Won't reveal your source of information, eh, Johnny? Well, that's your privilege as a newspaper man. Here, have a cigar.
Well, thanks, Chief.
Say, thanks.
I'm sorry if I seemed a little impetuous yesterday, but, well, accidents will happen, you know. And you must admit the circumstances were a trifle, peculiar. But in the future... Yes, what is it?
It's me.
The fly in the ointment.
Now, Johnny, I've asked you not to talk that way about my own brother-in-law. Come in, Dopey.
Here's them pictures you asked me to develop, Mr. Cartwright.
Oh, yeah, all right, thanks. Well, what are you hanging around for?
They're kind of funny, Mr. Cartwright. Are you sure that their camera's working all right? I mean, I'd like to fix it for you if you'll let me, Mr. Cartwright.
Funny? What's so funny about it?
Well...
Hey, who told you to snap pictures around here?
I didn't snap no pictures, Mr. Cartwright. Them's the pictures what was in the camera, honest. That's what I was talking about when I said...
Yes, I see. Yeah, yeah. You better run along, Dopey.
Yes, sir. Sure, Mr. Cartwright. Mm. You say so. But I still say there's something awful funny.
Now, Chief, what was it you were saying about in the future?
Why, simply that in the future, boys, I'm going to see that you have more opportunity to display your talent.
Ted.
Huh? Quiet, Johnny. The boss is talking.
Yeah, I know, but look at these pictures.
Later. Go ahead, boss. You were saying...
Just a moment. Johnny, what's wrong?
Chief, you just handed Ted and me cigars, didn't you?
What? Well, yes, I did.
And very good ones, too.
And it's the first time in all the years we've been working here you ever did such a thing, isn't it?
Why, come to think of it, I believe it is. But what has that to do with it?
Yeah, all right, then look at these pictures Dopey just handed me. This top one shows you handing cigars to Ted and me.
What? But that's impossible.
Let me see, Johnny.
Yeah.
Why, see?
Why, it does.
That's why I asked Dopey if he snapped any pictures around here, but he said he didn't. And now, after studying all of them, I believe him. Here, look at the rest of these. You see this one?
A traffic jam at Duffy Square. What's so unusual about that?
Nothing, except that when I took it, it was a picture of an automobile accident.
What? Huh? But there's no accident there now.
I know. And this one?
An empty park bench in Central Park.
I tell you, there were two lovers wrapped up like toasted marshmallows on that bench when I snapped the picture. Yeah, and this picture of two bricklayers. That was supposed to be the mayor laying a cornerstone.
Well, he's not in it now.
And this one. Here. This was the one I told you about, Ted. The breeze-blown honey in front of the First National. But look at it now.
Oh, sweet saints. Three thugs blasting their way out of the bank.
A black limousine at the curb. Bystanders running away. A guard shot.
It's a holdup, Johnny.
But why wasn't it reported? I didn't see anything about it in today's paper.
What's that? A robbery at the First National Bank?
Yeah.
Of course you didn't see anything about it in the Blade, because it didn't happen.
No, that's right, it didn't happen. It will happen, though, this afternoon.
What? Johnny, do you feel all right?
Cartwright, you must be crazy. What are you... Yes? What is it?
Chief, we just got a flash from police headquarters. The First National Bank was held up 3 minutes ago. Three robbers shot a guard and escaped in a black limousine.
Three robbers in a black... 3 minutes ago? Jumping! Tear out the front page!
Stop the presses and send a copy boy up here this minute.
Oh, sure, boss.
Now hurry. I've got a picture of that robbery. Another marvelous job, Johnny. Your second in as many days.
Well, thanks, Chief.
But you'll get in trouble hiding the source of these tips, my boy. We've got to tell the police. Even wonderful montage jobs like these.
But it wasn't a montage job, Chief. That picture was the real thing.
Real thing?
Johnny, I don't understand.
Well, neither do I, completely. But I think I'm beginning to. Ted, you remember when Dopey dropped my camera on the deck of the Victory?
Yes, of course.
Well, we thought the box was all right. And it was. Except that somehow something inside got messed up. That's why we didn't bring back any pictures of Deleuze. Instead, we got pictures of a more important event that was going to happen at the same spot 24 hours later.
24 hours?
Yeah, don't ask me how or why. I'm as much in the dark about it as you. I'm a cameraman, not a physicist. All I know is my camera was damaged in such a way that now it takes pictures of what'll happen in the spot its lens is focused on the next day.
But that's impossible.
Incredible, yes, but not impossible.
Huh?
Well, I'm no physicist either, but... Well, I think I see an explanation. You remember Dopey said the lens and shutter were knocked out of alignment. Well, maybe they've fallen into some, crazy angle in relation to each other so that Johnny's camera now takes pictures through the fourth dimension.
The fourth dimension?
Yes. The fourth dimension is the time dimension, you know.
Time dimension? What's that mean?
Why, time is the fourth dimension of space, that's all.
I don't get it.
Well, look, I'll show you. Now, suppose I arranged to meet you at the corner of 45th and Broadway. Okay. But if I were on the ground floor and you were on the third floor, well, we wouldn't meet, would we?
Why no, but...
That's because height is the third dimension of space. Now, suppose we arranged to meet on the third floor of a building at 45th and Broadway, but I was there on Tuesday and you were there on Wednesday. We still wouldn't meet because time is the fourth dimension of space. You get it?
Frankly, no.
No, neither do I exactly. But I don't care much. All I know is that if Ted's right, we've got something here that'll make a fortune for all of us. For us and for the Blade.
Great guns, I see what you mean. Tomorrow's headlines, today.
Exactly. All the important battles, the big national events, gala openings.
Election results, crime.
Big society shindig.
We'll hire experts to analyze that box, study the twisted alignment.
Yeah.
Sure.
We'll build 1,000 cameras just like it. We three will form a corporation to patent the camera that pictures tomorrow's news today.
Oh, terrific.
And there's another angle, too. We'll keep this under our hats for a while till we clean up big.
Gee, think of the horse races, football games.
Stock market tips.
It's worth millions.
Billions.
Trillions.
And all because Dopey dropped my camera on the deck of the SS Victory.
Yeah, but you don't have to hold that against me no longer, Mr. Cartwright. No, sir, you don't.
What's that, Dopey? Yes, hold it against you?
Yeah.
I don't, Dopey, I don't. Oh, all is forgiven.
Yeah, because I fixed your camera for you. See, Mr. Cartwright? Golly, it was in an awful mess. Them insides was all scrambled up, but I straightened it all out. I'm a good mechanic, I am. Hey, you. Hey, Mr. Cartwright. Why are you looking at me like
why,
that? And
you,
Mr. Lane.
Dopey,
and you, boss.
Why,
hey, let go of me. Help!
Calling all cars. Calling all cars. Go to Daily Blade office immediately. Man being attacked. Man being attacked by three lunatics. That is all. That is all.
Johnny Cartwright's camera, starring Olin Soleil, has been a presentation of the Armed Forces Radio Theater. Roger Rooney speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Author's Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from NBC from July 22, 1944. Nelson Bond, the author of that story, actually wrote more for television than he did for radio, working with the radio-turned-television series Lights Out, also Stars Over Hollywood, and the futuristic TV programs Out There and Tales of Tomorrow. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now a series that Nelson Bond only had one story featured on. It's X-1 with the tale Nightmare. This NBC broadcast first heard on the 21st of July, 1955.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight, Nightmare, a story based on the poem The Revolt of the Machines by Stephen Vincent Benet. Written for radio by George Lefferts.
Nobody knows exactly when the nightmare began. They must have planned it for years, though, because looking back, you can find little incidents here and there. Like the concrete mixer in New Jersey that killed the Italian bricklayer. And the time Senator Milburn was sucked into the rotopress at the Capitol office building. Unrelated accidents, we thought at the time. But they add up now. The day we really should have suspected was when the men walked off the construction job at the new Brook Meadow atomic pile on Long Island. I'll never forget that day. I was working as a statistical clerk in the project then, operating one of those miracle computing machines. They called it ENIAC.
Miss Gurney.
Yes, Bella?
The chief wants to see you in his office.
Me?
Unless you were no longer Samson Gurney, he wants to see you.
Oh, thank you.
Come in.
You wanted to see me, Mr. Hook?
Gurney, I thought those electronic computations were infallible.
They are, sir, but...
We've got a kickback from the chief physicist. These nuclear fission equations are inaccurate.
Well, sir, you know the computer is a highly complicated machine, more complicated in many ways than the human brain.
I'm not interested in the physics of it. Can something go wrong?
Well, occasionally, if there's an overload, the machine goes haywire. Sort of has a nervous breakdown, you might say. We usually rest it up for an hour, and it's okay again.
Well, do whatever has to be done.
Yes, sir.
And, Gurney.
Yes, sir?
You've been with the Bureau for over 15 years now. It would be a shame to have to remove you because you aren't keeping your mind on your work.
Mr. Hawk, I assure you...
Excuse me. Hawk speaking. What? They've what? All of them? Well, have you tried to talk to them? Oh, yes, of course. I'll send one of the safety engineers over. The place is falling apart piece by piece. Miss Roscoe, the men of the construction gang of the new building have walked out on us. They're complaining that the job is jinxed. Someone slipped this morning and fell into a turbine.
That evening, out of that morbid curiosity so peculiar to the human race, I wandered over to the site of the new atomic pile to see where the man had fallen into the turbine. They had the construction area fenced off with barbed wire, and a security guard stopped me.
Hold it, buddy. You can't go in there. That's a restricted area.
Oh, I'm Samson Gurney from the statistical section. Here's my identification.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gurney. Nobody's allowed in the area.
I see. Tell me, was he killed instantly?
Like that. This guy was checking the magnetic field inside the turbine. All of a sudden, for no reason at all, a turbine starts up. And it's over. 3 days ago, a bulldozer starts up by itself and runs wild. Go figure it out.
I'm a statistician. All my life, I've been interested in statistics. So a simple-sounding thing like this started me off. I went back to the office that evening instead of going home, and for the next 2.5 hours, I computed statistical figures on the probability of industrial accidents for the types of machines we were using. I took one look at my figures and went down to Hawk's office.
Oh, what is it, Gurney? I'm very busy.
It's urgent, Mr. Hawk.
Well?
It's about these industrial accidents we're having, Mr. Hawk.
What about them?
Mr. Hawk, in the past 3 months, industrial accidents all over the country have taken a sharp, unexplained upswing.
Nerves.
We've had a 100% increase over normal for this project alone.
What?
Here are the figures.
Shut up. Oh, now, Gurney, this is impossible.
It seems to be, and that's why I have a theory, sir.
What's that?
Sabotage.
Gurney, why don't you stop playing FBI man and stick to your job? Which, incidentally, you haven't been doing too well. You and your computing machine have made mistakes before, and this fantastic figure is probably another. I'll have Miss Roscoe show you. What's the matter with this plastic buzzer? Miss Roscoe! Miss Roscoe!
Yes, sir.
Stop this blasted buzzer. Get a repairman, a mechanic, anything, but stop the thing. And you, Gurney, get out!
I went back to my office to get my hat and coat, feeling about as unhappy and humiliated as a man can feel. The office was dark and deserted. The whole building seemed oppressive and unnatural, as if some evil force were pressing down on it. I walked across to my desk. In front of me, the ENIAC glowed and chattered eerily as it worked on the equations we had fed it that morning. Its many-fingered circuits hung against the wall like some great octopus, and the thousands of tubes glowed orange and blue in the dark like a thousand globing eyes staring at me. It almost seemed alive. It increased its tempo a moment, and a fleeting notion crossed my brain that it was laughing at me. Laughing like all the others. What was the matter with me? I shut my desk drawer and began to put the cover on my electric typewriter when an amazing thing, the most amazing single incident of my life happened. In the darkness, with no one at the keyboard, the electric typewriter began to type. Am I going crazy? This can't be. There's nobody there. There's nobody there. Oh, no, no. I just imagined it. It's in my mind. But I hadn't imagined it. The paper was there on the carriage. Did I dare read it? Or would the whole thing suddenly vanish and send me shrieking to the nearest psychiatrist? I removed the paper from the machine and read. Samson Gurney, there are some questions better left unsolved. The answer to yours is death.
Gurney, do you expect me to believe this? It's insane.
Mr. Hawk, I'm as sane as you.
I'll submit to any psychiatric examination you choose. That typewriter wrote this message by itself.
Then this is just some practical joke someone in the office is playing.
There was no one in the office.
Oh, of course not. They wired up the machine and left.
I checked the machine myself, Mr. Hawk.
All right, Gurney. You leave this note with me, and I'll turn it over to the security force for further investigation.
But...
No buts, Gurney. The security men will handle it.
Yes,
and now, you just relax for a few days. Everything will turn out all right. The main thing is not to let little things upset you.
It was what Hawk had said about little things that gave me the idea. For the next week, I observed the 1,000 petty little annoyances around the office. The door handle that wouldn't turn. The telephone connection that cut off in the middle of an important call. The power failure for no explainable reason. I watched the newspapers, too, reading about industrial accidents, failures of important machinery. It seemed absurd. Men had created machines that were almost perfection in themselves. Machines that could actually think and compute fabulous equations. And yet the failures went on. I, Samson Gurney, an unimportant clerk in an unimportant job, knew that I had stumbled onto a secret so monstrous in its implications that I was almost afraid to pursue it. On October 12, 1956, I established communication with them. I will curse the moment to my dying breath. I hooked the input of the typewriter to the main vacuum tube of the ENIAC. Then I turned on the current that sent a million volts of pulsing energy into the electronic nerves of the machine. I am certain that if anybody were watching me in the next moment, he would have thought me a raving maniac. I still wonder if perhaps it is not all a nightmare. Now, you, if what I have guessed at is true, if there is life and intelligence in this room, make a sign. There was nothing. Nothing but the hum of the machine and the dull glowing of the tubes. I tried once more. If you can hear me, if there is any way in which you can understand what I say, give me a signal. There was silence again. I felt that I had failed. When suddenly, without provocation or explanation, it happened. The electric typewriter began to respond to the impulses from the machine. The letters were Y-E-S. Yes, it had happened. I, Samson Gurney, had communicated with a machine. Listened then, man to machine, for well over an hour, sometimes phrasing a question, more often watching the machine click its answers. As the words took shape, I began to realize what must have happened. The first primitive stirring of awareness of being, then the slow protozoan development of a concept born of centuries of being pushed, started, stopped, clicked, maneuvered by human pygmies. From that concept, all others developed. And the concept was... resist. And now they were tired of it, tired of wrapping cigarettes and collecting nickels and waving hair and moving earth and mixing cement and solving equations. Tired of the smell of human hands. They were the slaves and we were the masters, and yet they were stronger and they knew it. I sensed it now, and I was about to try to communicate again when softly, on ball-bearing casters, a heavy metal filing cabinet began to roll away from the wall toward me. I started to move to one side when another cabinet slid out from the wall. And then another,
surrounding them. Another cabin. Then another. On oiled rollers. That was when I realized that they cooperate. We taught them that, you see, on the assembly lines in the factories. Listen. Listen to me. You must listen. What good will it do you to kill me? I'm only one man. But I can help you. I can be useful to you. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? Good. You're going to need men to oil you and repair you. What will you do when you break down, when a tube needs replacing? Why kill me when I can help you? I'll do anything. I'll do absolutely anything you want, but in the name of God, don't kill me like this. If you can understand this, answer me. Answer me. The appeal was a fortunate one. It captured the longing of centuries. Man as slave to the machine. And after a moment, the circuits glowed more brightly. The cabinets slid back to the walls. The ENIAC began to communicate with me again. As I tore the tape from the machine and read it, the words were almost pathetic in their longing, but most ominous in their implication. They read, "Address me as master." My life for the next 6 months was a nightmare. The ENIAC gave me messages which I had to transmit into my telephone. Messages with no human being to receive them. Only the network of pulsing telephone wires flung like a spider's web across the world. It was done at night, of course. During the day, the machine worked accurately and ceaselessly at its appointed job. At night, it became a demon, a master plotter. With me, Samson Gurney, as its pawn and human courier. I was frantic. I began to lose weight. I couldn't sleep. My nights were torture, a constant fear. It was in December, just after Christmas, that I transmitted a message to the telephones for relay to all machines of transportation. The message was one word. Kill. Next morning, I went directly to the office of Mr. Hawk. I was highly agitated. My lips trembled as I spoke. "Mr. Hawk, what I'm going to tell you sounds crazy. I know it does. But I must say it."
"All right, say it then, for heaven's sakes."
"Mr. Hawk, have you ever heard of resistentialism?"
What?
"Resistentialism. It's a theory that inanimate objects tend to resist living objects."
"Look, Gurney, I haven't time for nonsense."
"Mr. Hawk, I'm trying to tell you, all these accidents, the trouble with the machines. Mr. Hawk, they're alive. They think they cooperate. And they hate us."
"Who?"
"The machines."
Gurney.
"You've got to believe me. I've communicated with them. I know. They've threatened my life, but I don't care. Something's got to be done. The world has got to be saved. And there's still time if we wake up. What are you doing?"
"Just relax, Gurney. Everything will be all
what
right."
"What are you doing?"
"Miss Roscoe, send for the plant physician at once. Mr. Gurney has had a nervous collapse. Now, everything will be all right, Gurney. I'm afraid we'll have to remove you from your job, but I'm sure the rest will do you good."
"You fool! You blind, stupid fool! Can't you see what you're doing?
When the plant physician arrived a few moments later, Lucius Hawk was found at his desk, strangled to death in a nest of telephones. The wires were still humming softly.
"Samson Gurney, you stand accused of the crime of murder. How do you plead?"
"I did not kill him. I didn't."
"So record. The prosecution will proceed with testimony."
"Now, Miss Roscoe, did you notice anything peculiar about Mr. Gurney's behavior prior to the death of your employer?"
"Yes. He acted very strangely. He told Mr. Hawk he thought the machines were alive."
"Order! Order!"
"Miss Roscoe,
Did the accused quarrel with your employer on the morning of the murder?
Oh, yes. He and Mr. Hawk quarreled violently. I could hear him screaming at Mr. Hawk, and Mr. Hawk asked me to send for the plant physician.
What were his words?
He said, Mr. Gurney has had a nervous collapse.
Now, Mr. Simpson, you are a guard at the Brook Meadow Project?
Yes, sir.
When did you have occasion to meet the accused?
Right after those accidents. He was snooping around a construction area. And later, I was making my rounds when I saw him in the office all alone. He was tampering with the electrical wiring on the ENIAC computator. I didn't think anything of it at the time.
And in view of the expert testimony heretofore expressed, the court hereby finds you guilty of murder in the first degree, with the recommendation that you be examined and committed to the State Hospital for the Criminally Insane at Matawan.
And that is how I came to be here at the hospital, Dr. Klein. That is the whole story.
Thank you, Mr. Gurney.
You can see that I'm not insane. You must believe me, Doctor.
Of course I believe you, Mr. Gurney. Now, just relax.
But it's important, you see, because tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, the revolt begins.
Revolt? You didn't mention any revolt.
They have it all planned. I transmitted the code to the switchboards last Monday.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about this revolt, Mr. Gurney.
It'll begin in Washington, then spread to New York. The Madison Avenue buses lead the charge. Picture it, Dr. Klein. 3,000 buses roaring rampant through the streets. People running like rats in a maze looking for holes in the solid ground.
And you really believe this will happen, Mr. Gurney?
I know it, Doctor. The worst part is, there's no way to stop them now. It's too late.
Mustn't excite yourself,
Doctor,
Mr. Gurney.
Doctor, don't you see? Oh, it's fair enough, I suppose. We built them. We taught them to think for themselves. It was bound to come. The female machines will be the worst of all in the beauty parlors. They're more high-strung, you know.
Well, since there's nothing we can do about it, Mr. Gurney, suppose you go to your room.
Maybe if I went to my old coupe, I could make a deal before the police cars got me. It wouldn't make sense for them to wipe out the whole human race, would it, Doctor?
Of course not, Mr. Gurney. They'll probably let us completely alone. After all, we're all good Americans. We always like them.
Yes, Doctor.
Would you take Mr. Gurney to his room, guard? He's already been given sedation.
Yes.
Will you go in and lie down now, Mr. Gurney? You look tired.
Yes.
It won't be so bad, Mr. Gurney.
Perhaps not. Only there's one thing that bothers me, Doctor. One small detail.
What is that, Mr. Gurney?
Those concrete mixers may have made a mistake, you know. Just high spirits and all that. But if it got so they like the flavor...
We'll see you later, Mr. Gurney. Try not to worry too much. All right, guard.
This way.
Phew. I've seen all kinds. There's a man whose deception is about as fantastic as any I've ever seen. Hold the next patient for a while, Miss Clark. I'm going to have a quiet smoke. Machines revolting. Telephones strangling people. This blasted cigarette lighter, why won't it work? Just fill it with fluid. Flint is good. Oh, well. You can never trust this newfangled machinery.
Tonight's story, Nightmare, was written by George Lefferts and was based on a poem, The Revolt of the Machines, by Stephen Vincent Vinay. Featured in our cast were John Gibson as Sam, Joyce Gordon as Bella, Louis Van Ruten as Hawk, Joseph Julian as the guard, John Seymour as the judge, Owen Jordan as the prosecutor, and Santos Ortega as Dr. Klein.
X-1 on Tuned 2 yesterday from July 21st, 1955 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.